Blog Talk Radio.
In the most holy name of Allah, God, who appears in the person of Master W. Farad Muhammad. In the name of his living Christ, he lives, he lives, he lives, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. And in the name of our rock reminder friend, brother Warner, guys, I mean everything and everything, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, it is my distinct pleasure to greet all of the believers, visitors, guests, voyeurs, hangers-on, listeners in the greeting words of peace, paradise, and power of Assalamu Alaikum.
Wa Alaikum Salam.
Thank you, Queen. It's the Queen of for real today. Sister, hold it down. I'd love to welcome you to another installment, another class of disaster preparedness. Now, over the weekend, we did a groundbreaking seminar at Muhammad Mosque number 11 in Boston. It was so out cold. You know, Brother Rudolph, he has really, you know, found what Allah intends for him to do. And when one is doing what they were built to do, when one is doing what they were created to do, when one is doing exactly what they were put on this earth to do, it makes them a god in that field because God has given them his inspiration, his energy, his focus, his information to share with his people for this point in time to get across his obligation. You know, we have to keep in mind that Allah is the master of all circumstances and that at any given time, Allah can move us much like pawns on a chessboard so we put where we need to be so that his objectives are met. So we're blessed to be used. You know, believers say, well, I don't want anybody to use me. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. We all want to be used. We're put here to be used. We don't want to be misused. That's what it is. We don't want anyone to misuse us, but surely we want to be used. And we absolutely want to be used in God's divine purpose. And Brother Rudolph is definitely walking in God's divine purpose. When I watch him, you know, do these seminars, and I'm doing them with him, but I'm not doing them like he's doing them because of the information that Allah has placed in him. I find myself watching him sometimes like the people in the audience. You know, I'm watching, I'm learning. Like, I didn't go over this information with him in advance. Like, I didn't know what he was going to say. Like, I didn't put together the PowerPoint presentation for him to do it. But once that divine inspiration, that divine electricity from Allah hits the brother, and he starts teaching, what was put on the page, what was put together with a PowerPoint presentation is nothing. You know, it's just words on a page. But when they have the life, when God brings his life into them, it's something totally different. So if you've never had the pleasure of being in a disaster preparedness seminar by the disaster preparedness team headed up by Brother Rudolph T. Muhammad, then I would urge you to email me right now at careunitdetroit911@live.com, careunitdetroit911@live.com, and set up a presentation. The only thing he asked for is that his travel is covered. I don't know why he doesn't charge more for these seminars. I don't know why he doesn't, but I guess it's because it's a gift from Allah, so he doesn't feel like he should charge. As long as you cover his travel and however many members of the team that you want, you cover their travel, but we support him whether we go with him or not. If you only called Brother Rudolph because you were on the East Coast, if you only asked for Brother Joseph because you were on the Southern region, or if you only asked for Brother William because you're in the Midwest, then we still send a support package with that person. Everybody still does their part, but just the one person comes. So we make it happen because the Great Commission, you know, the Great Commission has to be sought. So it's not about, you know, money will come. You know, if you seek the kingdom of God, all other things will be added unto you. You don't have to do anything. God got that covered. So you've never sat through a presentation given by Brother Rudolph. You are doing yourself a disservice, and I don't want you to do that to yourself any longer. You can also go to the website, which is careunitdetroit.weebly.com. careunitdetroit.weebly.com. That's a www. And please go to the website. On that website, there's a form that you can ask for more information, and that comes right to the care unit at live.com email address, and I'll get back to you within 24 hours. I don't leave emails out there. I get them immediately. As soon as I get them, you get a response. But if you have questions, even for Brother Rudolph, send them to me, and I promise to get your question answered. I will give you, you know, his response. He doesn't have time to answer all the emails. I'm not even going to pretend like he don't do it. But I'll make sure that George gets responded to. You'll get his response. He just ain't going to type it. I'm not even going to lie to you. You're 99% of the time, the response is from me. Even, but I'll, if it's his words, I'll sign his name as his advocate. I'll do that. But the response is going to be from me. He just doesn't have time. The brother is all over the earth. So today, as we wait for our brother to join us on the call, and I'm sure he'll be on the call shortly, he was very excited. As we were putting this show together Sunday, he was very excited and trying to come up with a title that he really loved, and he came up with, your needs exceed your resources. Or when your needs are greater than, doing it like a math symbol, needs, and then the greater than symbol, then resources, you're in a disaster. Now think about that in your personal life. Think about that in just your household. If you need a loaf of bread to feed your five babies, but all you have is a slice of bread, and all the babies looking at you like, now who getting this piece of bread? That's a disaster. How do you choose? Who gets the resources? How do you choose? That's the same thing that the American government has to deal with. When the needs of its people exceed its resources, what do they do? How do they choose? know, as Kanye West said, they don't care about us. And if you need him to tell you, you're in a crisis yourself. If you didn't already know that we're not first and foremost on their mind, we need to come to your house and sit down with you anyway. You know, as they say in the land of auditors, I am a proud member of the auditing staff of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and Nation of Islam. Come to present time, though. You need to come to present time. If you still think there are resources out there for black people, you're in trouble. Brother Rudolph was saying in the presentation that he did in Boston just this weekend, FEMA ran out of money 2 years ago. You didn't hear me. FEMA ran out of money 2 years ago. So if they don't have money because the disasters are coming faster than their resources, then that means they really got to pick and choose who's going to get paid during the next disaster. Now, if you know anything about Katrina, and unfortunately, I know a lot more about it on a personal level than I wanted to because I have immediate family, not no distant cousins, immediate family that was in Louisiana during that time. And it, my sister-in-law, she's so funny to me. She's like, she said, Michelle, I'm a smart girl. I have 2 master's degrees and a CPA. I'm a smart girl. And I had to fight like hell to get my money. She said, I kept worrying about my next-door neighbors, functionally illiterate, and had to go to Texas to seek shelter. She was like, I wonder how are they handling their business from Texas when I helped them when they was right next door to me because they're functionally illiterate. She was like, I know that I had to fight 2 years to get my money. I understand why there's not a lot of other houses on my block. I understand why my block still looks like it does 7 years later because they made it as complicated as possible so that they did not have to pay out the resources. Why? Is it because they hate black people? They might. I don't know. I'm not going to put that on them because they might. But it's because they only have so much. So if you only have so much and you got, you know, 2 little kids visiting you and then your own 3 little children, there are a lot of people out there who will feed their children first. And if whatever was left, they would share with the other children. Now, if you had a mama like my mama, she's going to divide it up equally. She don't care. Whoever comes to the table, everybody going to eat. Yeah, but everybody mama not like that. Some people mama look out for self and they kind first, their own people. Then whatever's left, they share with others. You know, my mama, she said, well, you know what we got here. You invited these people over. You ain't sent them home before dinner. You got to split it with them. So we were split it, but the American government no longer has enough to split with us. They're at the point now where their own babies would be starving. So they have decided that they got to take care of their own and got to conserve the resources because the resources are not available to meet the need. So we're in a very, very, very critical situation with things just popping off on a daily basis. So what do you do when things are just happening all around you and you were hoping that you were going to call FEMA? You were hoping that there was going to be some federal grant, some federal loan, some federal money, and 6 years later you're still living with a tarp on the roof. You know, all this, you're still hoping for that mystery guy, and he's not coming. So what do you do? What do you do? You pray and you look for your help. And your help isn't getting the training. Your help isn't getting your training. If you don't get the training, then you've let yourself down. If I'm telling you that there is a person that can certify you worldwide, Brother Rudolph has the credentials to certify people all over the world. No matter where you are, he's internationally certified. His certifications are good. Why wouldn't you call him? I mean, he's your brother. He want to come. Why wouldn't you reach out to him? Their brother should be on the road 365 days out of the year. We should be having to hear from him on location 365 days out of the year. Why not call him? Why not put him to work? But some of us don't think it's going to happen to us. Some of us are so naive or arrogant. I'm not sure which word it is. And we don't think we're going to get our turn. We really believe we're going to always be the person watching the TV saying, oh, my God, look what happened over there. Oh, my God, look what happened over there. So when you think that way, you're saying God is not just. When you think that way, you're saying that God is not fair. Now, we know that's not true. Truly just. He is absolutely fair, and he gives justice to the wicked as well as the righteous. So that means it's only fair that one day Katrina is at your door, that one day Sandy is at your door, that one day Eric is in your town. There's a tremor where you are that sets the building down that you're in. It's only fair that you get a flood. It's only fair that you get an earthquake. It's only fair that you get a tornado. And when it happens, will you be ready? Will you have any information? He said, well, Sister Michelle, you know, I got a survival kit in my house, but it happened somewhere else. You know, I might not be home. Absolutely right. But the survival kit might not be what you need. When it pop off, what you might need is CPR training. When it happens, what you might need is the ability to be able to calm a room of people. See, what I envision, Sister Queen, what I can see easily happening, you know, in the greatness of the mind of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, to have us go out and get this training and be ordered if a disaster hits. You know, I'm also in training to become what they call a board certified chef. And I'm, you know, I've completed like step one, and it's a minimum of four steps to become what they call a nationally board certified chaplain to be able to minister people and get paid to do so. They send you out when there's disasters. When there's a plane crash or when there's a tragedy, they'll send out the chaplains. Well, I can easily see the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan sending out the orders. I can easily see the minister using this great technology to have the auditors go and help our people wherever they might need that help. Wouldn't that be beautiful? You sitting somewhere and you, unfortunately, are in a tragedy, but there's someone to sit across from you, knee to knee, and be able to have pleasure moments with you so that you can get through the situation that they're in. See, there's so many levels to this. There's so many facets to this. There's so many parts to it. Things that we need to be doing to get prepared, but are we willing to do any of them? Any of them? Is there anything we're willing to do? Now, one of the things, because we're talking about resources, and because our people, myself included, near the top of the list, working with limited resources and multiple issues. Now, you know things, we know we are the people to which things happen. I don't know why they call it Murphy's Law, it ought to be Jackson's Law, because it seems like it happened more to black people. You know, you save up some money and the car go out. And my mother used to always tell me, well, you should be grateful that you saved up the money, that you saved the money up, because now you have the money for the car breakdown. A tragedy would be if you hadn't saved the money for your trip, now you don't have it for your car. Yeah, you can't go on the trip, but at least you have the money for your car. You know, we got to see the blessing in everything. That's still a blessing. At least you did have the money, even though you might not get to go on a trip. So right now, what can you do to help yourself if a disaster comes? Can you take $10 and go buy a radio that you can crank up? Those crank radios that don't require any electricity. You say, Sister Michelle, I don't really have it. You can get a 10. Come on now. You can hustle up a 10. Now, everybody should have some skill that's marketable, a legal marketable skill. Let me be clear. A legal marketable skill. You got to have something good.
Yes,
let me
make that point.
Right. Because they'll be like, I was listening to Queen of Visa Show. And Sister Michelle said, get out there and hustle. No, I didn't. I said a legal hustle. I'm out here because Sister Michelle said it. Queen ain't say nothing. No, we ain't say that. That illegal hustle. Be out there breaking the law. I'm trying to get my survival kit money together. Anybody told you to do that? So you got to have some skill. You say, well, I don't have any skill. Can you clean? Can you clean? There are people that are paid you to come clean their house. You know, we got to stop saying something is beneath us. Well, I ain't going to be. I wish I would be. You better shut up. You got to find something that you can do on the side that make a little extra money so you can sock some money because your regular job is equaling or not even equaling up to your bills. Why not every time you make a little bit of money, put a little bit aside for yourself? Have your own personal economic blueprint. You got to send some money into the economic blueprint for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to take care of all of us. Absolutely we do, because collectively we're stronger than we are individually. But you've got to also have a little bit for yourself. The way we're taught as believers in the Nation of Islam, it says, you know, that you're going to make some benefit for yourself, family, your community, and your people. See, we don't even expect that you won't look out for yourself. We don't even want you to not look out for your family. We don't even see that you'll send some money across the water and won't look out for your own community. So what are you willing to do to be able to be a help to your community, to your family, to people you love? So can you go out this weekend when you're out at the dollar store and pick up $1 store package of bandages? $1 store package of 4x4s or 2x2s, because you need the bandages and you need the gauze. You need all of those things individually. Why not just start picking up stuff at the dollar store? A bottle of alcohol. A bottle of, you know, just start picking up each little antiseptic cream, you know, each little thing. Just start picking them up at the dollar store. When you go, just buy one thing, and you will be surprised how quickly you will build your kit. You will be surprised how quickly you will be able to say, wow, you know, I've got amassed some things. Because keep in mind, you need a little kit at work. Keep in mind, you need a little kit at home. Keep in mind, whatever other place you go on a regular basis, you need to hide something there. You say, well, you know, hide it. Absolutely. You need to get somewhere and hide it, because if you leave it out, somebody will be in there getting Band-Aids, you know, passing them out, you know, for people with, you know, oh, my God, I broke a day. Oh, because, you know, the Band-Aid in the emergency kit that, you know, Sister Lachelle left here, let's look in there and get a Band-Aid for your broken nail. And you won't have a kit anymore because people will pick your kit apart. So, yes, you have to hide it. I know you have to have a kit, you know, at the mosque. You should make sure, you know, hey, I went out and I bought three dollar store packages of bandages. I want to donate one to the mosque first aid kit or my church's first aid kit. And if your church, mosque, temple, synagogue, organization, you know, I'm an elk. You know, I don't really go to church. I'm an elk. Okay, the Elk Lodge, wherever you go, I'm a Mason. All right, the Mason Hall. Wherever you go, I'm a Delta. Okay, the sorority house. Wherever you go, make sure that there's a safety kit. Make sure that there's a kit in case of an emergency. And we should all be working to even have the AEDs in our places of worship, in our places of workout. I mean, they got them in the market. If they can have an AED at the Walmart waiting for somebody to have a heart attack, surely you will want to have one in your church. You know, we're not saying that God is not able. He is fully able. But why wouldn't you want to have the device in your church to save a church member? You know, really, you know, prayer is a powerful thing. But, you know, in the teachings of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, one of his favorite sayings that he's quoted for saying to me, one of my favorite ones is, he said, you got to pray, but you also tie your camel. He said, you got to pray, but you also tie your camel. You know, we can't act like reality doesn't isn't reality. No matter how hard you pray, you standing outside when it rains, you're going to get wet. And God, an abracadabra God. We have to stop making God, you know, a mystery God. We're making him a mystery God because we don't believe in the reality of things. So you're going to get wet. You're going to get sick. We're taught in our holy books that you're going to have a taste of death. You're going to have a taste of loss. You're going to have a taste of misfortune. So, you know, do we want the taste to be a full gulp, or do we only want it to be a taste? There's some things we can do to prepare ourselves. So this week, I want you to promise you that you love you and yours enough that you will at least go out and get a dollar store bottle of alcohol, put it in a bag, and set that in the closet in a cool, dry place in your home. And that every week that you promise you that for the sake of you, your family, your community, your nation, that at least you'll be able to take care of you. You know, you have to be able to say, okay, I got supplies for me. I got supplies for my son. I got supplies for my daughter, my grandma, my household. Okay, we're good. But you can't forget the elderly. Notice I did say my grandma. You got to think of the elderly. Who's going to be able to get them? You know, I've heard so many sad stories and wonderful triumph stories from Katrina. But there was one story with a man. He had his two girls and his mama. His mama was sickly, and the mama told him, leave me. You know, take my granddaughter, get the babies out of here safely. You know, he had to choose to leave his mama because his mother was, because she wasn't well, and he couldn't get her and the babies out. Now, I don't know exactly what the situation is, and I'm sure the brother did the absolute best thing he could. I wouldn't even want to have to decide between my mother and my babies. I can't even imagine being able to make the choice. We all being safe and die together because you can't leave either one. But the brother, you know, did what his mother instructed him to do, left with her grandchildren, and the mother perished. So we have to create plans for our sick and shut-in. Yeah, Nana don't want to leave her house. She loves her house. She don't want to leave. But Nana needs 24-hour care. So she can't walk. She can't get around. Someone's got to go over there to take care of her, and they're sending out the little home health care aid. But you got to be thinking, if something goes down, what is the plan to get my mom out the house? If we can't call 911 because 911 has exhausted its resources. If there's no one that can come and get her out of this house, is that house a good place for her to be? If could we get her out of there? Is it safe for her to be there? Or should we consider, even though she doesn't want to leave her house, getting her into an assisted living facility? Even though she doesn't want to leave her house, can we find a cousin, an aunt, a relative, a church member who can move in with her so that she's not home alone, someone who's responsible for being there with her? Of course, we give that person a break sometimes. Can't put somebody in that kind of responsibility and leave them there. But I have a family member that I become guardian for, that I became responsible for over the years. And I had to, you know, it was very difficult to get her to leave her home. She didn't want to leave, but she kept falling. Then she fought. She called 911. Well, the police have to break in every time to help get her up. If they get there before I could get there, because I lived on the other side of town, I was like, well, we need to make a decision, because either you're going to have to live with me or someone else. You could choose. You know, you're an adult. Just because I'm your guardian, I'm not going to boss you around. But we're going to get you in there somewhere safe. She wouldn't listen to me. You know, kept fighting me on it. And I didn't want to strong on her, even though I had the court orders to do so. And finally, after she had enough incidents, an organization called Adult Protective Services came into play. And they said, oh, she has to leave. Now, once the state makes a decision, now the person doesn't have any more say-so as to what they're going to do or where they're going to be. So the state determined that she had to move. And so now, of course, she's miserable because she had to move into an assisted living facility, even though it's very nice. But I'm happy because now I know there's a system in place, you know, that if I have to, if this thing shut down, at least I know she's somewhere that has a generator, and I have time to get to her to figure out how to get her out rather than her being in the house. And I'm trying to figure out how to get to the house. You know, I don't know how much time I have. At least there are people there, and there's a generator there, and there's an emergency system in place there where it buys me some time to get things in order to go get her. So we have to think about our elderly. We have to think about the sick and shut-in in our community. You know, you might not have any relatives that have this condition, but you may have some church members that you care about. You may have a neighbor that you look out for. Well, that neighbor's going to be looking for you if there was a disaster. And are you really prepared to look out for that neighbor? Now, do you live in an area where there are things in place for the elderly, Sister Queen?
Yes, ma'am, I do. Fortunately, you know, I live in Brazos County, so it's a small county, and we have a place that is highly elevated because Bryan College Station is actually surrounded by three rivers. And so there's a preparation that they have for evacuation to higher ground. But that would not be feasible if, I would say, in Houston, because I know for sure that Houston does not have those things in place. It's just too saturated with people, and there's a lack of preparation. There's always, everybody is always so shocked, you know, with the weather in Houston because it changes so rapidly, but it just speaks to the fact that we need to be more prepared for everything. You know, even though things might not be typical, it might not be typical for it to get real cold in this part of Texas, but it can get real cold. And a lot of times what I see is that people are rushing out to buy things, and you go to the stores and the shelves are depleted because everybody waited till the last minute. And so what often happens with a city of this size is that we get a lot of traffic, we get a lot of people that get caught in the storm because that everybody is scrambling to get the goods that they need. So I can say for College Station, yes, I give them an A-plus on the evacuation plan, but for Houston, not so much, Mr. Michelle.
I'm glad to hear that you, because you living in a small county, as you said before. I'm impressed to hear that they care about their elderly and that they have systems in place, because sometimes the smaller communities if they don't have the resources that we're talking about today. But sometimes the good thing about being in a smaller community is there is a camaraderie. There's another concern. Everybody does know about everybody. You know, you live in a town of 30,000 people, and everybody does know who everybody is. Everybody does know somebody's missing. You will miss somebody in a town of 30,000, wherever you live somewhere with 800,000 people. You could get missing in a shuffle. People don't know, you know, where you are. Another thing that's very important is people need to be locatable. You know, all these folks who drop off the earth and you can't reach them and you can't call them and you can't find them and you calling three and four different people and texting three or four different people and nobody know where you are. You know, you really want to get away from that. We're getting in a time where if people can't find you, they're not going to keep looking for you. You know, we'll be looking for somebody else. We'll be like, well, everybody be like, well, we hope so-and-so all right. You know they always do that. We can't reach them. I've had the situation happen with someone near and dear to me that the only reason we knew that they were in a crisis because we couldn't reach them. And they're a person who always call back or text back, even if they're busy and they can't talk to you right now. They would send a text back, like, hey, I'll call you back. So at least I know you're okay. You responded in some way. But this person, I was calling them and texting them, and someone else was calling them and texting them. And that person called me and was like, hey, you know, they didn't come to service today. We're concerned because we're calling and texting, the person is not responding. So we were able to get emergency medical team to that person's house because we know that's just not like them and thank, you know, thank a lot we did. But if you're one of those people that, you know, you like to be off the grid, don't nobody know when you at work or home, you know, you ripping and running so much, can't nobody find you, you should be findable. You should be locatable. Someone should always have an idea where you are. You know, you can't be that busy. Your schedule can't be that erratic. You should touch bases with somebody on a daily basis to give them an idea of your itinerary. You don't want anybody keeping tabs on you. I understand. But when you're somewhere laying in a ditch and your head is split open, you're going to wish somebody was looking for you. You're going to wish, God, you know, you're sitting there like, I hope somebody coming to find me. Anybody coming? Because you do this. This is what you do. You disappear. So we need to know where the elderly are. We need to have a system in place where they can reach us. They have some great systems with these medic alerts. You know, I always think of a commercial when I was a little girl, and a lady would say, I've fallen and I can't get up. And then she gets the little medic alert around her neck. You remember those? Just so, it was so comical, you know.
Sister Michelle, I don't care what people say about dogs. I have one, and I live alone in a two-story townhouse. And I tell you that my dog is trained to hit my medical alert necklace. Even because sometimes you can, and I suffer with pernicious anemia. And for y'all who don't know what that is, it's anemia, but I don't reproduce red blood cells. So sometimes I could just pass out without warning.
Wow.
And my dog, she's a miniature Siberian husky wolf. She's half husky, half wolf. And when she was a year old, my brother took her to the Harris County Sheriff's Department and had her trained with the canine unit. Well, that training was 11 years ago, because she's 11, so that's been 10 years ago. But a couple years ago and about 8 months ago, it happened. I just passed out, and she knew how to hit. She clawed my chest until she got to that necklace and pushed that button. Because I have to have one because I live all alone, you know. And so even EMS, and you know, that's something that you can set up. I don't know about in Houston, in bigger cities, but here in Bryan College Station, the emergency medical services, the fire station that's about three blocks from my house, they actually have a key to my house. And so if, you know, if they get a call or they get my medical necklace goes off, they actually have the key to access my house and come in. And unfortunately, those services are not offered in bigger cities. But if you have an elderly relative, if you have someone who may be prone to passing out, whether it's high blood pressure, whether it's sugar diabetes, whatever it is, you know, they might have heart problems. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to tell everybody to get a dog, but at least if they're feeling severely ill, they can just push that button and they can get emergency services right away. And it works in big cities, whether you have a dog or not. So that is something that it's not that expensive. I think the necklace itself was $50, and I think the monitoring fee is like $7.70 a month. So it's worth every penny because it could mean
absolutely.
The difference between life and death, you know, of a loved one. So I would highly suggest that. I could tell you that this dog has saved my life at least 4 times. So,
oh, wow.
A lot for Frosty, yay.
I know that's right.
Yeah.
Now, was he trained to do this, or did you train him yourself?
She was trained at the Harris County Canine Unit to kind of be like a watchdog. But when I got the necklace, I think the first time I passed out, I don't know if it was out of her excitement, you know, that she knew instinctively something was wrong. But all I know is that they said that the button was pushed, and I know I didn't push it. And so I saw the claw marks on my chest, the little red scratch marks on my chest, and I knew she had did it. And then the second time it happened, I knew she did it. I knew she did it. So instinctively, I guess she just did it. I don't know. You know what? I do know. All praises are due to Allah. I'm not going to say I don't know. I'm going to say
girl,
that Allah is God. And I'm going to witness
right.
that Allah is God. And Allah will give you what you need when you need it. Just keep the faith and believe in Allah. If it ain't nothing but the faith of a mustard seed. Don't let me get the testifying up in here, Sister Michelle.
No, I'm telling you, I will not miss the opportunity to proclaim the greatness.
Yes, ma'am. I can't thank Allah enough for the many, many blessings I've
know
had.
That's right.
With this dog, I'm telling you, because when you live alone, you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, I've had her since she was a hand pup, and I don't know where I would be without her. I'm just saying. That's just the dog.
I
do. Yeah. You know, and I know they say don't keep them in the house or whatever, but, hey, if I hadn't had her, I would have been burnt up. I would have been bitten by a snake. And, of course, I would have died for lack of oxygen to the brain for those two incidents that life. So, yeah.
Oh, my
God. Yes, ma'am.
But animals have that. Yeah. There's something in animals. They have that early warning system. They know. I mean, think about when they had the tsunami. The people said the animals were running to higher ground. And they were watching the animals run, and they knew something was wrong. But they couldn't tell
mm-hmm.
about the weather yet. But the animals had that early warning system. But I don't know. I understand what we taught about not having pets all up in the house like a person.
Well, I'll tell you what about Frosty. Frosty, I am 48 years old, Sister Michelle, and I just saw the mother plane the first time ago.
Wow.
Had it not been for Frosty, I would have missed it because we were outside, and if you ever been in the country, it's pitch black dark. We were outside, and I have to keep her on a leash because as long as I've had her, she's not that dog you can let walk down the street. You got to put her on a leash. And I let her out, and all of a sudden she started barking and jumping, and I'm looking outside thinking somebody is approaching us or something. And she just cutting up for some reason, but she kept jumping. So I thought maybe something was in the tree. So I looked up, and there was. And she saw it too. So I was like, I'm astonished because I've never seen it. And I was like, oh, my God. It was just the most amazing sight. And in the country where it's dark, it is so vivid. You would not believe.
Wow.
And I, wow. You know, I'm not going to say I was skeptical, but I would always say, well, you know, you have to be very special. You got to be highly exalted to see the mother plant because I've never seen it, and I've been in the nation all my life. Finally, 2 years ago, last August 10th, August 10th would be 2 years, is when I saw it for the first time in my life. And again, if it hadn't been for Foxy, I would have missed
right.
it.
Frosty and Believer. Frosty and
yes.
Believer. Frosty want to make sure you ain't missed it.
Oh, no, girl. I can't tell you about Frosty and doing rock up, okay? When I do prayer, she tries to do rock up.
No, but she's around. She in connection with her nature. I mean, you know, animals, they do their praise. Now, you know, I was always taught that birds singing in the morning was their form of praise.
Yes, of course. Everything submits to the will of God and
yes,
of us.
Right.
And they say that we are the most intelligent human being, but everything can submit their will to do the will of Allah except
right.
us. So mm-hmm. I sometimes question, are we the most intelligent? But Sister Lachelle, you have a comment, a question. From Lois, because Lois says that something like Hurricane Katrina could not be prepared for. What do you do in that situation if it should happen again? So, I have no. Well, I got an idea, but
right. Well,
I'm gonna let it.
I'm gonna go back to what I said. Prophet Muhammad said, "Peace and blessings of Allah be upon him." You got to pray anti your camel. You don't know where he would be after in Hurricane Katrina to say that there was nothing that you can do. My brother, my biological brother who I was raised up with every day of my life until he left home to go to the military at the age of 18, was in Hurricane Katrina. Brother, because he had been 30 years in the Marine Corps, he knows how to pack a survival kit. He knows how to be prepared. When the hurricane hit, he already had things stored up, not only in his house but in his garage. So he did prepare. And where other people lost their lives, he had a boat. Where other people had nothing prepared, he had things lined up so that he was able to make it until such a time as he could, you know, get some extra help. Like, he didn't leave home. He never left his home. He had his boat. He had his generator. He had his dog, just like you. He had two dogs. And he felt comfortable waiting it out until other emergency medical teams could get there to help his neighbors that he helped. So you just don't know. It's one thing if Allah just wiped your house off the block, yeah, probably nothing you can do if you was in the house. But what if you're not in the house? What if you're one of those people who was locked on the highway and all the cars were stuck on the highway, but you had water in your car? You had a little nourishment in your car. You had your medication with you. So you had to stay on that bridge for 3 days. You had water and medication because you had a survival kit in the car. You don't know where you'll be, so not doing anything is not wise. But doing something, you know, just do something. And you never know what you might do might help somebody else. Oh, I'm not home. When the disaster hit, I was at work. So my survival kit at home didn't do me any good. But what if you could call your neighbor and tell your neighbor they could come and you have supplies there and they could go and be helped? So I think it's kind of, I don't think it's wisdom to not do anything, saying, well, you know, all is lost. You don't know that. So I say, still say, pray and tie your camel. Do, you know, pray and be prepared. Still do what you can do, because you never know with that little bit you do, wait, how far it might go. So that's what I would say, Queen. What would you say?
Well, you know, I think that we all witnessed the horror of Hurricane Katrina. Not necessarily physically, but just watching Hurricane Katrina. I was one of the volunteers of when they came to the Astrodome, and to see the despair and to see the suffering after Hurricane Katrina. And so what I would suggest in that case is that you stay prepared. And if you live in low-lying areas, because I know that, I think, if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, I think Houston is like 60 feet below sea level or something like that. I'm not sure. Don't give me, you know, don't quote me. But I know that the Ninth Ward of New Orleans is lower than that. So when you have situations with hurricanes, high waters, and things of that nature, sometimes it's just best to prepare to evacuate. It's better to be safe than sorry. It's better to have a places of refuge, whether it's in another town, at a relative's house. It's good to, you know, lay off the Starbucks coffee, lay off the midday hamburger or whatever. Put that money aside for emergency travel money in the event that you have to evacuate. And don't use plastic, because it could be a situation where the power could be out, the ATM is not working, you can't use your credit card at the gas pump. You know, these are things that when you live in a high-risk area, you have to stay prepared. And so we know that that particular part of New Orleans is definitely a high-risk area. Anybody who is living there now, if you've been able to go back and obtain residence again, then I think Katrina was the ultimate lesson of what not to do. And so have your first aid kits, have your survival kits, but also have refuge at another relative's house, or be able to come to a bigger city, a higher ground, and get your hotel room for a few days just to see how things are going to play out. I just always say that, Sister Lachelle, preparation is the best way. And, you know, that's the only way that, you know, you won't be panicking. You know, you'll have everybody prepared to move out, because a lot of times you don't have time. A lot of times you don't have time. You know, I don't know.
That's true. You just got to move out. Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what kind of meteorologist that you have, you can't predict what Allah God is going to do.
That's true.
So that is the reason why we have people in our nation like Brother Rudolph and Brother William and excuse me, and other emergency personnel and Sister Lachelle that give us information to prepare us to move out in the event something like that happens. We'll do.
That's right. I mean, you have nothing to lose by getting prepared, but you have everything to lose by not doing it. You know, you might say, and I mean, the sister makes a valid point. I can understand what she's saying. You know, hey, whatever's going to be is going to be. But what if it doesn't go down like that? What if you don't get wiped out by the first wave? What if you live? Now what do you do? If you don't know how to purify your water, if you don't know how, if you don't know where you stuck something at, if everyone you know that lives in your immediate area, not just your family, but even your neighbors, if each one of your neighbors, you know, your neighbor who live in the upper floor, you know, if you know that person got the water, and the person on the lower floor, they got the powdered milk, and the person, you know, in apartment number C, they got an MRE, a meals ready to eat, you know, dried meals. If everybody has a little bit of something, yeah, if they knock out building A, we all still can go to building C and get a little something. If they knock out building C, we can go to building E and get a little something. We can make it to Nana house. We know Nana got a fortress at the basement. I know my grandmama did. So if everybody has a little something, you know, if I could just get to this end of town. See, you got to remember, the entire city of New Orleans did not go under. The Ninth Ward and some of its close surrounding areas. But if you had a friend that lived in Slidell, if you had a friend that lived in Baton Rouge, if you had a friend that lived somewhere else in the New Orleans area, You can walk to Slidell. You can walk to Slidell from New Orleans, from the city of New Orleans proper. You can walk to Slidell. You can walk to Baton Rouge if you have to. You know, that's another thing. We got to get in better shape. You know, we can't even walk from through the parking lot to the mall. We can't walk from the restaurant to the car. You know, we've got to get in better shape. And nobody's saying you got to run a half a marathon. And I do have a sister in Detroit who is over 40, who is doing her first half a marathon. And I'm very proud of my sister because you're never too old to get into better shape. And her husband is, you know, her partner, they doing it together. It's so beautiful to be able to have something do like that with your spouse, something for better health so that you all can live life more abundantly together. So let's start walking now. You know, another one of the brothers in the mosque, I'm not calling anybody's name because I didn't ask permission in advance, brother started off walking a half a mile a day. Now that brother is up to 6 miles and he's walking at a brisk pace. I looked up, he was down by my house. And I live quite, you know, a couple clicks from where he lives. So, you know, you just start off doing a little bit. You can build up. But when the disaster comes, be clear, when the disaster comes, what will you be ready to offer other than your life? You know, I don't want to have to be the grandma and say, well, go on, take the grandbabies. You know, I just go on and die. And now my legacy is that I allow you to leave me behind to save my grandbabies. No, I want to go too. I want to go too. Now, if it's by Allah's permission, I'm not supposed to go, then can't nobody take me. But if Allah grants me the energy, the strength, and the health to get up and go, I'm going. Because my life is too precious to me to give it away. It's too precious to me to give up. I mean, I'm a fighter. I'm like, let me go. You know, I don't want nobody to carry me. If I'm going to be a dead weight on you, yeah, leave me. But if I prepare now, if I strengthen myself now. So you say, well, Lord, my legs ain't strong. Well, can I strengthen my arms? You know, if your legs ain't no good, can you get your arms strong? So we put you in a canoe. Are your arms strong enough that you can paddle on your side of the boat? You know, what can you offer to the group? If they say we can only take 6 people, what can you offer? My arms are very strong. I can row that boat. I know I've been practicing. When I go to the gym, I get on the rowing machine. I can row for an hour, get in the boat. Now, you just earned your seat. What are you willing to offer? Hey, I got some water. And if y'all let me on the boat, I'll bring my 6 bottles of water. And then everybody get a boat. If y'all don't let me on the boat, I'm leaving with my water. Get on the boat. What can you offer that makes you able to have something to barter at the table? Because money ain't going to do you no good at that time. It's about bartering. So what do you have to offer that you can help, you know, in this time? So that was an excellent question she raised. And I'm sure that's on a lot of people's minds. And that's probably why Brother Rudolph doesn't have more schedules, more training schedules, because a lot of people probably think, nothing I can do.
Well, you got a comment from Ken. Excuse me. Ken wants to know about bartering. Excuse me. Bartering during times of disaster, Sister Lachelle, and that's a tough one now, but I'm going to let you handle this, Queen.
Well, tell him that's a wonderful question. I hope he's still listening to the show. That is a fantastic question. Bartering is awesome. And the beauty of bartering is, brother, that you don't have to wait to start bartering when there's a disaster. You can start bartering now. I mean, that's a great way for people not to be able to count your money or your resources. If you're going to cut my lawn and I can offer you dinner for a week, I mean, there's a lot of things you could barter with now that you don't have to wait. So I would say start doing some bartering things now, brother. You know, start something small. What do you have that you can offer? And see how many goods and services you can exchange. There's a bartering website that I use from time to time, and I just to keep in the practice of bartering. You can go on the website, and there'll be somebody on there that says, I need somebody to type a 25-page paper for me, and in exchange, I'm willing to make them a peach cobbler. Like, it can be something that simple. I'll make a peach cobbler. Well, you might say, well, I don't know you. I don't trust you to cook nothing for me, but I do need some beautiful stoneware. And if this person is saying they do peach cobbler, then maybe they have some pots, pans, dishes that I could get from them. So you can offer something back. Like, I don't want you to bake for me. I don't know you. I'll type the paper, but what about in exchange if you did this for me? So you can, and sometimes let's say you take the peach cobbler, because this is how bartering works. It's really deep for people who are not fully aware of how it works. I'm glad the brother brought up the question. I can say, okay, I'll take the pie. So the lady says, well, all I'm offering is 5 pies. I'm not offering nothing else. Take it or leave it. Okay, I'll take the 5 pies. I'll put the 5 pies back on the bartering shelf.
They said, who wants five peach cobblers? What can I get now for five peach cobblers? So I might take something from you that I don't need, but I may can see in my mind's eye. Maybe I was on another bartering site and saw somebody saying, God, I just need two peach cobblers for my church picnic. You know, I have a lawnmower I'm willing to give up for two peach cobblers. Now I can give them the two. I still got three to work with something else. So you can get something in a barter and be able. There was a guy who took literally, I can't make this stuff up, and you can Google it. I'll see if I can find it and post it on your website, Queen, or for this show so people can go back and look at it. I'll see if I can find it. He took literally a paperclip, a red, it was like a red or a pink. It was a colored paperclip. I can't remember which color now. And he bartered that paperclip. When he finished, he had a cabin. Got a cabin. So he bartered the paperclip for something else. And when he got that, he bartered that for something else. And he kept leveraging different things he bartered until he got owned a whole cabin. So he ended up with a home from a paperclip. So it depends on how good you are at this thing and how willing you are to work with them. If somebody says, I'll give you, you know, 50 stalks of corn, are you willing to say, you know what, give me the corn. I'll find something else. I can't use it. But I know I'm a good enough salesperson. I know I'm a good enough worker that I can get out here and grind and get this corn flipped. You know, I'm not trying to glorify any kind of criminal enterprises. But if you're a hustler, you're a hustler, you're a hustler. If you're a moneymaker, you're a moneymaker, you're a moneymaker. I'm not shocked that Brother Jay-Z is a multimillionaire now, doing what he's doing with the rap game and clothes and all the different things. Because the man was a mogul when he was selling drugs. Now, of course, that's absolutely unacceptable to sell death to our people. But he proved, I'm a businessman no matter where you put me. If you know how to do business, you know how to do business. So don't tell me. And I hate it when folks lie and claim they was out there hustling, they was out there grinding, they was out there in the gutter, they was handling much business, moving major weight, and now they broke. There's no way on God's green earth, Queen, that God would let you be successful in wrongdoing and won't give you no success in righteousness. That's absolutely unbelievable to me. If you can get out there, if you want to get out there and hustle and make it happen illegally, surely you could turn those skills into doing something legally. Because if you were selling drugs or stealing cars, you still had inventory you was responsible for. That's no different than a legitimate business. That's no different than a bartering system. You got to know what's in your inventory. If you know you bartered and you got a crock pot and a pair of scissors, you got to keep track of everything you got. So when you look on the bartering website, because they do have a website that you can use. Now, when this thing crashed, of course, you won't be able to go on the website. You'll have to talk to people. So if you're someone who's a social, as my son calls it, a socially retarded, you're socially retarded, you can't talk to people. And you don't know how, you can't hold a conversation, and you can't use your personality, then you're going to be hungry. So that's something else we need to start working on right now, because nobody want to help you if you're a jerk. Nobody want to help you if you foul. So you need to, if you, people keep telling you, you got a funky attitude, hey, your outlook on life is jacked up. It's a good time to work on that, because when this sucker go down, anybody want to help you when you foul? They don't want to help you now. So these are some things we can work on. I'm glad he asked that question about bartering. I'm huge on bartering because I don't want the devil to have a receipt for everything I buy. That's why they give us these little debit cards. That's why anybody can get an ATM card. No matter how jacked up you are, they give you a debit card. That's your money, but it lets them track your spending habits. So they know that you like to drink this kind of coffee when you go to Starbucks. So we want to poison you. All we got to do is get a caramel macchiato half and half because that's what you drink. And make sure we have that present for you. You'll drink it and you're dead. We know what you eat. We know what to get for you to please you and take you out of here. So I don't like doing a lot of electronic transmissions. I love to do things in cash. And that's also something I learned from my brother who was in the Marine Corps for 30 years, who survived Hurricane Katrina very well at home with his dogs and his generator, his stockpile of supplies, because he said, if I leave my home, Shell, I was in the military for 30 years. What I know, they're going to come in here and take everything I stockpiled. They're going to take it. But if I'm here, that's less likely to happen. But if I leave, and when they open this house to see if anyone's here, they're going to take everything they can use, including my truck. And I'm not willing to give up my stuff. I'll stay here. I'll bunker down. And that's what he did. But he had that NOAA radio that Brother Rudolph is always trying to get us to go get. Well, I don't know why we won't just go out and get one radio. It's not going to break you. On the high end, I mean, they can be very expensive. But you can, generally speaking, you can get a very good one for $25. I've seen them as low as $10. Brother William was doing the research and had found them down for $10. But if you can get on this radio show, you can Google that from your cell phone. You know, you have a worldwide access at your fingertips. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, and it's true, that one day we would entertain the devil in our living room. We can entertain the devil at our fingertips with these cell phones. You got children with internet access can download pornography and whatever else they want to. But why not use
what the devil created for evil, why not use it for good? Right now, while you're sitting here on the phone with me, you can put this on speaker. You can be listening to the show and Googling up your stuff at the same time. And not necessarily Google. You can use Bing. You can use Safari. You can use Yahoo. Whatever search engine that you prefer. Doesn't have to be Google. We don't want to make them that rich. But we can create our own, as a matter of fact. But this is a good time to start looking. So since you're into bartering, Google that. You know, research that. Bing that. Yahoo search that. And look at some bartering websites, brother, right now, so you can get a feel for it. I mean, you can go in. I'm serious. A man had a paperclip from a paperclip to a cabin. So I absolutely believe 100% in bartering. Thank you for bringing that question to the table. But you bartered, haven't you, Queen?
Yes, ma'am. You know, all I can say is that, hey, bartering works for everybody who is facing economic difficulties. Bartering works, and it could be for anything. And, you know, I want to tell single mothers in particularly, because I remember when I was in Prairie View, and this was many, many years ago, but there was a girl who she needed books. And so, you know, she didn't get the money, but there was a professor that was at Texas Southern University, and she could get a discount on books. So she would go to this professor's house. She would clean up. She would sometimes watch her children. She would comb her daughter's hair, and she would come back to school the following semester with all the books that she needed. And it wasn't hard work. It was just good, honest work in exchange for something that she needed. She was, you know, she had a scholarship, but it didn't cover her books. It didn't cover a lot of things. So these are some of the things that she did in exchange to get what she needed. So sometimes it's not money. Sometimes it's one item for another. In the case of a disaster, you know, somebody might have a large supply of water. You might have a large supply of dry beans. So you might could exchange a couple of pounds of beans for a couple of gallons of water, whatever may be needed. So let's not think about money all the time, of course, but let's think about things that are pertinent to you at that time and even pertinent to you now. You know, like you might not have gas money, but the lady across the street may be elderly. Maybe her fence needs to be mended.
That's
maybe
right.
Her windows need to be washed. Maybe her yard
That's
needs
right.
to be trimmed. And maybe she's paying, you know, somebody else to come by. Maybe she's paying that person $25 or $30 a cut when you could go over there and say, well, look, I'll charge you half of that much because I need gas money to, you know, get me from here to there. You know, so it's not just money. It's goods and services. So keep that in mind when you're bartering. And also, we have all these people on the phone. We want to hear from the people on the phone. I'm so happy that you all support us. I'm so happy all of you called in. But I am so taken aback that on Tuesday night they want to sit and just sit. And I understand you might be taking notes and things of that nature, but please, we want to hear your voices. You know, from all of you, we got some New Yorkers on the phone. We got somebody from Detroit on the phone. We have, oh, God, we've been talking about Louisiana. We got Louisiana. We got Albuquerque, D.C. I think that's a Long Beach number. San Diego. Who else? I don't know that area code. And a couple of Houstonians. So Austin, Texas, we got in the house. Yeah, so we want to hear from you all on this issue, too. And please share ideas with us about, you know, when your needs exceed your resources, because maybe it's something that Sister Lachelle or myself have not thought about. And so, and Kenyatta, she says, Sister Lachelle, that babysitting services. She said she was thinking about the show that I did last night on missing children, and she said that babysitting services could be bartered as well. And it could very well be. You're absolutely correct.
My mother.
Because if you got a sister that can't pay you to watch her children, maybe she can't pay you to watch her children while she's out, but maybe she can, you know, give you a ride for 2 weeks or wherever you got to go. Whatever.
Oh, absolutely.
Whatever she
may
have.
When I was a young mother, I used to
murder
like that. That's true. No, you're 100% correct. I did that as a young mother because I couldn't afford, I mean, I was married, but I couldn't afford to pay a babysitter for me and him to go out. When we wanted to go out and go on our little date, we just went to the park and sat down. There was times we paid more for the babysitter to watch our three children than we couldn't afford to pay for them on the date. The date would have to be a free date so we could pay the sitter. So what we started doing, I got together with some other young couples, and we started watching each other's children so each other could go out on a date with our spouses. So I watch your baby. So you and your man can go out. Then 2 weeks later, you watch all the children so me and my man can go out. When I was younger, my mother, because she was a very wise and financially prudent woman, my father died when we were young, and she worked for that money that she got to take care of all three of us till we were grown. And one of the things she did is a family member wanted to live with us because they wanted to move from east side of Detroit to the west side. But they couldn't afford to pay rent anywhere because they wasn't making much. So my mother said, well, you can live with us because my shift is about to change at work to afternoon shift. And that way my children won't be latchkey babies locked in the house. If you're there, they can go out in the afternoon. So that person was working daytime. We could go. They came home by the time we got home from school, and we had someone to kind of watch over us so that we could go outside and play because up until that point, we had to stay. We'd come home from school. We'd have to get in the house and lock ourselves in. And my mother wouldn't allow us to go outside and play with no one to be responsible for us. So she used it so that they could have room and board in exchange for them paying her. They watched us. I did it with other young mothers. We worked in a network of mommies where even if the mommy, maybe you didn't want to go on a date with your husband. Maybe you had to go run a dang on errand on a Monday afternoon. You need somebody to watch your baby so you can go handle your business. We will watch each other's children so the other mother can go handle her business. So absolutely for child care. I just don't know. My boys are big now, and they do stay home alone. I mean, they're 14, 16, and 17, you know. They grown. They don't need a babysitter. But I wouldn't leave town. Like when I, you know, go out of state to do these disaster shows who are just in Boston. If I can't find someone to look over them, even though, you know, they're almost grown, I still want them to have an adult who is responsible for them, that they can say, hey, you know, we need help. Because sometimes things are happening, you know, children don't panic because they don't know what to do. They're scared they're going to get in trouble. So I always leave someone to watch over them. So I was able to take them, you know, with me most of the way to the trip, leave them with another believer. All praise is due to Allah. I'm telling you, there's nothing on earth like being in the Nation of Islam. Because where I don't have blood family, I got family in the blood. You know, so we good. I'm good either way. I'm covered. All praise is due to Allah. So they stayed with another believer, and my children were well taken care of. For me to go and do the Great Commission with Brother Rudolph, do this show, know my babies were safe and secure, know they were with a believer, so I wouldn't have to worry about they were going to be eating, seeing, experiencing, knew they were covered down on physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and that believer was like, you don't have to do anything, but, you know, they just need food, you know, just because my children are vegetarian, his children, you know, their children eat meat. But they were like, just make sure, you know, they have whatever they need to eat. And there was no other, they wouldn't even take any other money from me. But they, because they know that's bread on the water. There'll be another time when they'll be with another believer or with me. Because Savior's Day Detroit was here. You know, we was making it happen for people. People was crashing with me who came in town early and crashing with me who stayed over after Savior's Day. And I don't have a big, lavish home. Absolutely not. But, you know, it's clean and you can come here and stay. So we were able to work that out amongst each other. So, you know, there's been times believers came to town like, I can't afford to get a rental car, but I got to make some moves. Hey, I work daytime. You can use my car till I get off work. So that's still bartering. Mm-hmm. Even if the person doesn't give you something back, you know, we got to stop expecting total payment at time of service. Sometimes you cast the bread on the water. Sometimes you're making a deposit for a future withdraw. So I might help you today. Who knows? 5 years from now, you may be able to do me a favor. I always think about the movie The Godfather. When he came to the Godfather on the day of his daughter's wedding, he asked the Godfather for a favor. Oh, I may have to one day ask you for a favor. I may never ask. but one day I may need a favor from you. So we got to be willing to say, well, I'm going to do this for this person right now, and they may never do nothing back for me, but God is going to bless me. So that, and that's a barter with Allah. And, you know, it says, what is a beautiful thing to make a loan to Allah, you know. And that is like making a loan to Allah. We take care of each other. You know, Allah is watching us. The angels are keeping our records right now, today. Mother Tainetta has explained that to us so many times. So why not do a good deed, seeking no gain, and see how God worked that out. So with that brother and that family, that brother and his wife, who helped me with my children when they were in town for another reason, I was able to assist them, not expecting them to ever have to assist me. But then this opportunity came over here. They were like, sure, no problem. We'd love to help you. You know, remember, you helped us. I didn't even connect the two, but Allah was casting bread on the water by me being obedient and helping them. Then it came a time where they could help me, and they offered. I didn't even ask, but I didn't even think of it, because that's not how my mind works. I don't, you know, keep record of every time I do a favor. Remember that time? No. Because Allah going to bless me. I don't even want you to bless me. I want him to do it, because he is the best at blessing. But definitely with the babysitting piece, any sisters, brothers listening right now, think of another couple that's in your similar situation who you could trust with your children for a couple of hours. And then, and that you like their children, and that you could let their children home for a couple of hours, and you all can barter for each other. Set the rules. You know, hey, drop off by 6, pick up by 10. You know, don't do anything without any rules. You know, always have a boundary. And we're taught as Muslims in Holy Quran, it talks about writing up contracts. So there's nothing wrong with literally, physically writing up a contract for an exchange, even of services, so that everybody's clear what they got. And as my daddy used to say, fair exchange is not robbery. So if everybody's happy with what they got, then you're good, you know. But make sure everybody's happy. You know, you always got that one martyr friend, because I have a friend. I love her dearly. And if she's listening right now, she's going to text me, because she's going to know I'm talking about her. She is the most martyred person I know. She always giving us stuff for free. The sister is, I mean, she's a master at what she does. She's a god at what she does. Allah has truly blessed her with an excellent skill. And every time I look up, she's doing it for free. I think you better stop it. You know, just because Allah gave it to you as a gift does not mean that you cannot reap a blessing from it. So I won't allow her to be doing that free stuff for me all the time. You know, sometimes she's like, no, I love you. I just made this for you. That's cool. But when I put in my order, when I want something, I put in my order and I pay her. Or I work out a barter with her where I can do this. Can you make me this for that? But you got to make sure it's fair exchange. You can't be telling somebody to make you a garment so you can wear it to the mosque. And you want something beautiful to wear to the mosque, and you offer them in return, you know, a doggone peach cobbler. Peach cobbler is not comparable to a three-piece garment. It's not comparable. That's not fair. You know, we need to say crazy stuff like that. I'm going to wash your car for 2 weeks. I want you to watch my kids for a month. Now, how in the heck am I going to watch your 5 babies, and you wash the car? You better buy. That's not fair. So we got to make sure it's fair. And that's the good thing about some of these bartering websites, because they do kind of show you what's fair. You know, you can't give me pennies and then you want me to give you mangoes. You know, there's got to be a fair exchange. So it kind of teaches you.
Well, you
how
know,
to do a fair
you
bargain.
Know what I could tell you, Sister Michelle, I'm so guilty of that myself. I am. I will give away my whole household. I do that, you know, but Allah always gives it back tenfold. So I understand your friend. I really do. I really do. But if you know, but
she's
an
angel.
And I'm always the one coming, oh, girl, now I'm going to pay you for this. I'm the one that always paying always giving. But you know, Allah has blessed us over and over and over again. And so I just keep that spirit. Just keep that spirit. But I wanted to add this to the share too, because, you know, I think it was a beautiful event in the Tampa study group on Father's Day. And I know it was done across the country at various mosques, but they actually had a salute to the FOI on Father's Day. And I forgot all the little items that were in the gift bag, but it was something on there that said that the FOI was the backbone of our nation. And, you know, when you think about that, that is so absolutely true. And so I want to remind the sisters in particularly, you know, sometimes when we are single sisters, single parents in particularly, we, you know, we need things done. And we probably can't always afford to do it. You know, I think it's a shame that you would go to a Jiffy Lube or Lube City and you pay somebody $60 to change your oil and check your fluids and things of that nature. Well, I'm pretty sure you got brothers in the mosque who might need some extra change that would charge you half of that, or some single brothers in the mosque that would just love a good plate of food to come over there and check your oil, or come over there and fix a door or a window, whatever it is that's broken, and they get a good nutritious meal out of it. Because
that's
a lot
right.
of our single brothers, I tell you, I'm bad witness, a lot of our single brothers have bad diets. They have terrible diets. Now, I'm not saying that the brothers can't cook, because they can. But more than likely, if a man doesn't have a family to cook for, he's going to grab and go. He's just going to grab something to eat and go. He's just
right.
going to eat a sandwich or whatever. But then we want to keep our men healthy, and we want to keep our brothers healthy. You know, you don't have
That's
to be
right.
married to a brother to want to take care of your brother. That is still your brother. You know, so I miss the days in Houston when I used to cook like a whole 30-gallon pot of bean soup, and I would fry like 100 pieces of fish and make a big old salad and banana pudding or whatever it was that they wanted for dessert. And every Friday night, all the FOI after study group would come to my house because I would feed them. You know, that's the least that we can do for our brothers who are securing
that's
our
right.
nation.
That's
and, you
right.
know, so, you know, sometimes if you need some maintenance down around your house, you need your car looked after, though I'm pretty sure the brothers don't mind. They will charge you half or a quarter of the price that some of these other places will charge you. And just, I think it'd just be nice and sisterly to fix them a nutritious meal that you know that they might not receive otherwise. And that's all I wanted
so
to add.
Beautiful. That's so beautiful what you said. Absolutely. Brother Rudolph just texted me. He's available if you could get him on the line with us to join in on this conversation as we wind down the second half of the show. I
yes.
love that.
Let's see if we can get our dear brother Rudolph. My
the brother, he's surviving about 3 hours of sleep a day.
Oh, he sound like me.
Girl, many of us, we be burning the candle at both ends trying to get it all done to take care of everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and I thank Allah for the health and the strength to do what I need to do and do what I want to do and do what I have to do. I'm not going to complain at all.
Allah is awesome. That's all
I
can
know
say.
That's right.
Because we all have about 22-hour days around here. And so that's how it is. But when you work at When you're working for a lot, you feel no pain. That's it.
That's true.
You feel no pain.
Oh, my goodness. You are telling the truth. You And it gives you extra boost to get it done, too. You be wanting to stop. You be like, I can't stop. I got to be there for the believers. Because we know that we are all alive. When we're serving our people, we know that God is pleased with us. And it gives you that extra boost.
But Master Farah Muhammad there shall slept, if ever. And I tell you, when you align yourself with Allah, there's an energy, there's a motivation, there's a spirit that drives you. People are on me all the time. And they say, Queen, you say you've been up 3 days straight? Yeah, I've been up 3 days straight, but there's an old gospel song says, I feel no ways tired, you know, because it just rejuvenates over and over
yes.
and over again. All praise is due to Allah. We got
That's
some
right.
real street soldiers in the mosque. I know it's not just me, Sister Michelle, Brother Rudolph, Brother William.
That's right.
Brother down in Tampa, Brother Jihad and Brother George and them. I mean, they on the grind 21, 22 hours a day. But it's
That's
a
right.
love for our people. It's a love for Allah, and we're trying to get the work done. We're just trying to do our part to give your very best, to give Allah less than your best is a slap in his face. So
that's
I
right.
refuse to give less than my best. So if I can give everything I have, that's what I'm going to do. And assalamu alaikum, Brother Rudolph.
Hey!
Assalamu
alaikum, brother.
Alaikum salam, family. Listen, y'all finish testifying. It sounded like this was a session of what Allah has done for me. So
I know that's right.
Yeah, I'm not interrupting. Go ahead.
Well, we do have a call on the phone, Brother Rudolph, now that you're here. I guess we want to talk to Brother Rudolph, Sister Michelle. So let's see who is this calling us from Austin, Texas. Last four numbers, 8439. Your mic is live.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam. Yeah, I just heard this calling in just to listen to the show. I have listened to several shows y'all put on, and I'm very pleased at the shows because y'all be dealing with facts. And I am a Hurricane Katrina survivor, and I went through Hurricane Katrina. And I could tell you that we was not prepared as a people to deal with what was going on in the city of New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina. We were not prepared. And when the people came in, when the soldiers came in, they came in with their guns cocked and loaded. They didn't bring no supplies, no water, no food, no nothing. They came in with their guns pointed at us, ready to shoot us down in the streets as if though we were animals.
Wow. Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Oh, I'm telling you the truth. It was just totally chaos out there.
And see, that's the part of Hurricane Katrina that we don't hear about. I mean, I've heard little snippets of that, tidbits of that. But why don't you share your story with us? What really happened?
It was just terrible. It was just terrible down there at the convention center. They was doing everything you could think of. That was wrong. I saw people getting beat up. I saw women being raped. I saw people being shot and killed by the New Orleans Police Department and everything. I mean, it was just total, total chaos down there. I mean, we was not ready for nothing that went on with Hurricane Katrina. The people were just savagery gone mad.
Wow.
Oh.
That's sad.
You know, I hear y'all say be prepared, and you're absolutely right. We need to be prepared for whenever this happens again and teach our people what to do in a time of a crisis because we didn't have no help whatsoever, none whatsoever. It was
wow.
a martial law down there. It was like a martial law down there when they came in. They came in with their guns cocked and loaded. And this all the story
brother,
they don't tell.
I want to ask Brother Rudolph right quick. Brother Rudolph, when the people that you depend on turn on you, you know, I'm saying that in the terms of under the circumstances of preparing for disaster, what do you do?
That's a good sister. That's an excellent question. As my brother that's there can bear me witness, the first thing that you have to do is you have to somehow get over the psychological trauma that just hits you that, oh, wow, I'm the victim and they still trying to kill me. They're not here to help me. When the people that you think are coming to help you reveal themselves that they're not there to help. They're there to kill you and take whatever you got. You are, that's a heck of a psychological barrier that you have to get over first before you can do anything, because your mind is not even adjusted to the fact of the new reality. You're in shock. And that period of shock lasts different intervals for different people. It all depends on, you know, who you are, what you've been through prior to that, and how strong your mind is and your desire to live. Because at that point, a lot of people could just give up and just say, we're doomed, we're never going to get out of this, and they just succumb to the circumstances. But, brother, can you tell us a little more of how you and your family personally dealt with that, if that's not asking too much?
Well, going to the message of teaching on how to eat to live, it taught us to eat one meal a day. So during the 3 days and 4 days that we were stuck down there, we had very little to eat, very little water, and it was total chaos around us because there was no food, there were anything, but following the teachings of the message, eating one meal a day helped us survive because all we had was sardines in a can and a couple of bottles of water, and that's what we survived off until they brought the buses in there and bust us out all over the country.
Wow. See, and family, what you got to understand is it's not as easy as it may seem, you know, psychologically, again, talking about one meal a day, because we're talking about getting on your one meal a day now while there's no pressure at all. There's nothing forcing you really to do it other than you want to be in obedience with Allah and his messenger. But we're talking about now at a time when the pressure is on that you don't have a choice but
right.
to only, and that's a heck of a situation to be in. You know, brother. Now, were you in your home at the time? I mean, where physically were you and your family when this kicked off?
Well, most of my family had left, and me and a cousin of mine got stuck on the roof of our house when the flood hit. And we stayed on the roof of the house for two nights before a boat came by and picked us up. And we had to get on the interstate and walk down to the convention center where we thought they had supplies and stuff at. And when we got down there, it was just total chaos. I mean, I had never seen anything like that before. I mean, it was just... I don't even know how to put it in words. It was just total chaos, man. People doing everything. I mean, it was still everywhere. Dead bodies laying all over the street. People were dead in their cars, under the water, and different things like that. I mean, it was just total chaos.
Now family, again, now listen to what he's saying. Now, here, he and his cousin, they're on the roof of his house for 2 days before they got rescued. Now, again, as a father, as a brother, as an uncle, as a man in general that has a family, imagine what's going through his mind as to where the rest, and there's no cell phones, family, There are no cell phones that you could just pick up the phone and just call whoever you want to call. So you don't know where the rest of your family is. You don't know if they're alive or dead. You don't know when you're going to reunite with them. You're trying to reconcile with the fact that this is actually going on, and you're trying to get to a place of safety yourself. But in the back of your mind, you're still thinking about, where's my family? How do I get to them? See, and this is why we keep talking about having these, doing these drills and making the plan, rehearsing the plan, practicing the plan, and tell somebody the plan so that everyone knows what the idea or what the plan is when disaster strikes. Not if. Notice we're not saying if, family. We're saying when. Brother said, when it happens again, letting you know that that was not a one-time thing. It's going to happen again. And Katrina was a test for some that a lot failed. And so, you know how it is with an exam. You fail an exam, you have to take a makeup exam. Well, we're going through that now, so the makeup exam is coming. So, Brother Tuck, all right, can you tell us, all right, so now you got down to the convention center. Then what happened with you?
Well, when we got down to the convention center, it was completely being overran by the people. People had kicked in the doors, had went in there and ransacked the convention kitchen, but looking for food and everything like that. And I met up with a few brothers down there that I knew, and we all agreed to watch each other back while we was down there, because it was just this, it was just that chaotic down there. And we all stuck together, and we actually saw a police officer came in there, shot and killed a man that night, and the Army came in, the National Guards, they came in with their guns cocked and loaded, started putting the people in the groups and different things. I mean, it was just total chaos.
Now, while all of this is going on, now, this is before any help or any supplies or anything arrived, correct?
Oh, they never brought no supplies in there. They brought buses in there. They kept the supplies out at Zephyr Field, which is in Metairie, Louisiana, which is about another 10 to 15 miles away from us, about 15 miles away. They kept it in at Zephyr Field. They never brought supplies in there to the people. They brought buses in there, and then they put a lot of people on different buses to Texas, Oklahoma, Austin, where I'm at now, and different things like that. They never brought supplies in.
So, once again, family, here you have, you're getting eyewitness testimony from someone who went through it. Eyewitness testimony of someone. Now, brother, so you said you met up with a group of brothers and you decided right there on the spot that you would watch each other's back to help each other get through this nightmare that you were going through.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Yes, sir.
See, now, family, now think about this. And, see, all praises are due to Allah that this brother is alive now and that he can talk about, because there are still some survivors who are still caught in real time. They're still living the nightmare of their ordeal in Katrina, and psychologically they have not processed the information yet, and they are still stuck psychological shock syndrome. They're still stuck there. This brother, obviously, all praises due to Allah, has been able to overcome that and is functional, is lived, has survived, and has begun his recovery process, which shows you know, the recovery phase is the longest phase of the disaster process. The disaster, when it hits, happens in seconds. The remnants of the disaster linger on for years and sometimes decades. So now, brother, now, so obviously you never returned back to your home, correct?
That's correct.
Were you ever offered or afforded the opportunity to return back from the government?
Yes, I was. But after going through Hurricane Katrina and knowing that the water levels in the city couldn't, it could happen again at any time. And if a storm was to get into them, to the Mississippi, it would have had, we would have had anywhere from 25 to 30,000 people dead. Just thankful that that storm didn't get into the Mississippi River. And if it had, New Orleans would have been underwater, at least 50 to 60 feet underwater.
Wow. Now, brother, if you can, if this is not asking too much, you know, physically and emotionally, let's go back to the actual day. Now, the night before, of course, everything is going on. The winds are blowing. The rain is coming. You know, the hurricane is there. It's on you. It's actually going through it. But now, correct me if I'm wrong, the hurricane had passed. The winds had subsided. The rain had subsided. The sun was shining the next morning. Everything, again, where the storm is concerned, had passed before all hell broke loose early that morning. Am I correct with that?
That's correct. That's correct. And it was the canal. It was the Canal Street levee that gave away, and that's one of the largest levees in the city. And when it gave way, it opened up and let Lake Pontchartrain come right on in.
See, and we're not even getting into the whole debate back and forth about whether the levee broke, whether it was exploded, whether, you know, we're not going into that. What we're trying to get you to understand and to reconcile in your mind, family, is, see, a lot of people don't make that connection that the hurricane was over already. In some people's mind, the worst had already happened, and you survived that. That was done with. You were, you know, dealing with the fact that, okay, we made it through another one. Okay, let's assess the damage. Let's start getting things back together. And then, oh hell! Now, for what they said. Now, did you hear the the bang or the boom before the water came rushing through the streets? Or
it was on TV. The news people was on TV and told us that the levee had bust and the water was coming in. And we went outside and took a look around so we could see the water levels rising. So we went outside, got the ladder, and got on top of the roof at that time. But it was on the TV that the water was coming in.
So no time to really do anything at that point except what you said, get that ladder and get up high as you can, which was the roof.
which was the roof.
Now,
and
again,
take my word on it. We barely made it up on the roof. That water came in so quick and fast, it was unbelievable.
See, and family, that's another thing that you have to try and understand is a flash flood, which is what that represented, what that represents, a flash flood. It's a flood that comes from nowhere and immediately just overtakes you. And you can't outrun it. You're not going to outswim it. You sure can't drink it all. You can't stop it. All you can do is pray that you survive that initial instance, and then you have to be able to reconcile within your mind, this happened, what do I do next? And to have the state of mind or the clarity in your mental faculty to be able to be in the midst of the storm and make rational decisions, that's a whole nother thing that you have to train and plan for, because making rash decisions at a time like that can also get you and your family killed. Is that not right, brother?
Yes, sir. That's right. But did you know that Hurricane Katrina hit on the same day that Emmett Till was murdered?
No, I didn't, bro.
We didn't know that. Oh, my God. Wow. Well, I have a question, Brother Rudolph, if you don't mind, because it's been how many years since Katrina? What, 9 years?
Nine years.
Since August, right?
Yes,
August
has to be 9 years.
And so I want to know, and if you don't mind, brother, if it's not too difficult for you to share the psychological trauma from that.
Well, I have nightmares. I dream about some of the bodies I saw in the cars that was underneath the water when we was going over in the boat. We passed over cars that was in where it had bodies in it and stuff like that. We saw people floating in the water dead. It was just awful. I mean, then when we got to the bridge, we saw people just laid out on the bridge, dead, covered up, and everything, with people just left them right there. I mean, it was just bad. I mean, people were dying everywhere.
So was it like people that you knew, or was it, you know, just random people that?
Well, a lot of people were random on the interstate, but like I said, a lot of people that I knew, I still haven't found them yet. And I do a lot of searching on Facebook, and I still have friends down in New Orleans that I do call and talk to, and I met some of the people up here in Austin when they brought us here, and a lot of people that went back to New Orleans, but I chose not to go back because of what I know about New Orleans, and I don't want to go through another hurricane like that.
Yes, sir. And again, that's a conscious decision that a person has to make at that time, and putting all the actual facts together, not emotional, just making a decision based on actual facts.
Yeah.
So now, your family is with you in Austin?
No, my mother and my two brothers, they're in Dallas, Texas, and my kids is in Grand Prairie, Texas. I'm up here in Austin by myself.
Okay, but you are connected with them. You guys communicate.
Yes.
Praise be. All praises due to Allah. All praises due to Allah. Now, how long was it before you got word about the rest of your family?
Well, after they started busting us out, and they took me to, my first stop was in Dallas, and when they took me to Dallas, I was able to contact a cousin of mine there, and he told me that my mother and them were okay. He said they got out in time. They got out in time.
But it was
a week.
I could just imagine at that point hearing that news there, that was like a weight had been lifted off of you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Wow. Well, brother, so that you will know, I'm going to put this out now. We'll talk more about it as the days go on, but there's something big that's going to happen this year on the anniversary of Katrina. And this
yes,
is something that we are doing. And when I say we, I'm talking about myself included, because I am included in this, and the people I'm connected to in the sense of Brother Aton Edwards, Brother Barry Crumbly, members of the International Preparedness Network, Ready Up America. We're planning something for that day. I can't go into more details than that. But, brother, I want to make sure that we have your contact information, because I want to make sure we stay in contact with you, because
okay.
I want you to make sure you are a part of what is going on, because I think it will help you psychologically to in your healing process.
Yes, sir.
And can we have your name, sir?
My name is Kamal Muhammad.
Brother Kamal Muhammad, all praises are due to Allah. Of course, for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his teachings, but all praises are due to Allah for you for willfully accepting these teachings, because it really sounds like the teachings are what brought you through and got you to where you are at this point.
Yes, sir.
All praises due to Allah.
See, fam, sister Queen, can we make sure that we have brother's contact information so we can stay in touch with brother and get some information out to him?
Yes, sir, I do have his number.
Thank you.
Yes, and I'll send it to you.
All right, thank you. And Brother Kamal, before we want to, do you have any last thing, last words in that respect, but I mean, is there anything else that you would like to say to anybody that's on the line listening and your family?
Well, all I would like to say is that we need to be better prepared for the next situation that's going to take place in the near future. Because after going through Hurricane Katrina, I've been preparing myself for that day. I got a backpack that's full of equipment and stuff like that, radios, two-way communications, and everything. So I've been preparing myself. So if anything go on, I'm a little bit ready for it.
Well, praise be to Allah. And, brother, I want you to know that you're not by yourself and you're not alone where you are. Sis, we need to put him in contact with Brother Captain Khalid and Sister Christina.
Oh, yes, sir. Absolutely.
Yeah, brother. You do have family. You have another part of your family that is right down there where you are who is actively working to ready the people and to prepare the people and organize the people so that that type of horrific thing does not happen again. And I'm quite sure that I know that they will welcome you with open arms, brother. And this is a place where you can now utilize the experience that you've been through to help and train others on what they need to go through. So, again, all praise to Allah, because Allah, in his magnificent, infinite wisdom, what we consider a tragedy, can take it and use it as a learning point and as an education so that countless numbers of people can benefit from the experience of one.
Yes, sir.
So again, we thank you, brother, and may Allah continue to bless you and your family and to keep you. And you stay strong, brother, because
you have
a testimony, and you are a witness, the best witness for Allah and his mercy there can be.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Michelle, would you like to ask Brother Kamal anything before he goes?
I just thank brother for coming on and being so willing to share candidly his experience. May Allah bless you, brother, continuously. And he kept you
thank
here
you,
for
sister.
A purpose. He kept you here for a purpose. And I thank Allah that I got an opportunity to meet you today, brother.
Thank you, sister.
And Brother Kamal, I just want you to know that if you are still looking for people that you have disconnected from since Hurricane Katrina, whether it's a search or a recovery, I can help you with that. So I left a message for you because we are Facebook friends. So I left a message for you in your inbox. So if you send me the name, I would definitely put out a search for them. I have a database that I probably can locate them.
Okay. I appreciate that, sister.
Yes, sir. And thank you for sharing your story.
You're welcome.
Thank
you. Thank y'all for listening. As-salamu alaykum.
Yes, sir.
Wa alaykum salam. O-M-D as they
say. Ooh, I just can't imagine. You know, and you know what, Brother Rudolph, I don't care what nobody say. You know, there are just certain things that I don't think you can prepare for, because especially at a time as tragic as Hurricane Katrina, to have the people who are charged with protecting and serving time on you in that time, you know, it seems like we are void of humanity or something, for lack of a better expression. I mean, but really, that's all I can say is,
well,
I don't know.
Well, to that, I'll say this. This is why we who have taken on this responsibility of being the Pied Pipers for our people and being the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, prepare, because the day is coming for each of us that we will have to face that same reality. But all praise is due to Allah. We already know that the teachings teach us that we have to rely on Allah and ourselves. And now when we say that, I'm not saying that in a void, I'm saying that in real time, because, again, the teachings teach us that we make up Allah. We are Allah.
So saying that we have to depend on Allah and ourselves, in one sense, yes, we're talking about Master Farad Muhammad, the omnipotent, omnipresent, ever-present being. Yes, we're talking about that Allah, but we're also talking about the Allah that is in real time when the believers, those striving to be righteous, band together and do things on behalf of the whole and not the individual. We're talking about that Allah also.
Hmm. Yes, sir. And Brother Rudolph, we have a question from, LaJosa. He's asking me this question because I'm from Texas, but I'm pretty sure Brother Rudolph is still more qualified. He says that he just moved to Texas from Portland, Oregon, and the climate has been a shock to him. What possible disasters could he face in Texas versus where he comes from in Portland?
Wow. Okay, yeah. See, that brother right there is going through culture shock right now. Coming from Portland, Oregon, which is the Pacific Northwest, and going down to Texas, that's night and day. What possible disasters that you can face there where you are now are, of course, you're subject to extreme weather conditions, extreme heat, drought, of course, the mosquitoes, definitely. The whole phenomena of tornadoes. You're going to deal with tornadoes. You're going to deal with I said drought.
But we have a lot of flooding, too, here when it does rain, because a lot of people probably don't know this about Texas. It looks like wide open prairie, but there are a lot of peaks and valleys in Texas. There are a lot of lakes and rivers in Texas. So not only is the weather and flash flood an issue, but also animal life during this time is an issue. We have a lot of bayous, and we have a lot of lakes and rivers that feed into other ports of water. And so when these waters are out of their banks, more often than not, we have gators that actually come into the city during that time. And if you live in one of the houses that have a swimming pool, I suggest after an extensive rain that you don't go out there and just jump in your pool because you might have a visitor.
Well, depending on who you are and what your appetite is, that could go either way. That could be a visitor or that could be a meal. But
so we don't eat the alligator. Oh my God!
No. It only if you're from Florida, where where they do serve alligator tails and rice.
Are you talking about a meal, Brother Rudolph? I'm talking about a belt and a purse. I don't know what you're talking
about. Right. Look, we're talking about disaster, so I'm talking about a meal. Hey, so give you some hot sauce, Candy.
Okay. That's funny. I swear I wouldn't be thinking about that. I've been thinking about a purse and a belt with some shoes.
Family, we're not, and I want to say this, family, we're not making fun of anything. We are using some levity, though, because you have to be able to kind of laugh at some of the things that go on. Laughter is a form of first aid, and laughter is a form of medicine that helps people process and heal. So you have
to get
your sense of humor together, and don't lose your sense of humor, because you're going to need it. It's going to help you to get through some real hard times.
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
Last of it all.
Yes, ma'am.
No, I just say you have to learn to laugh in the midst of it all. I tell you, I do something with people. All the thing that keeps me laughing is that I know that at the end of it all, Allah is going to be victorious. So I laugh at the devil and all his attempts. That's what I do.
That's right.
Yes, ma'am. You're 100% right. Because, again, at the end of the day, it's all about Allah. Make no mistake about that. Allah is in control. No matter which way this thing goes, no matter how it spins, Allah is in control. So the best thing that you can do is make sure that you are in tune with Allah. Because as long as you're in tune with Allah, then you can kind of make it through no matter what goes on, because at the end of the day, you know that you are not in control. See, that's one of the things where we really go through the psychological issues at, because we feel that we are in control, or we're supposed to be in control, or we're supposed to be able to deal with X, Y, and Z. Well, who told you that? Who told you that you are in control of anything?
Right.
Other than, you know, Allah is in control of everything. And so once we realize that and understand that, and we give that power back to where it's supposed to be, then we kind of take ourselves out of that matrix. And so those false senses of security and those false pressures are not on us and don't plague us and keep us trapped, bound, and feeling hopeless when we're not in control of the situation.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
But if we really believe that Allah is in control, we got to thank him even for the difficulty. Because if we really believe that we serve a God that's fair and just and loves us, even when it looks like, you know, all is lost, even when it looks like we're in a horrible relationship, we're in a horrible situation, we got to be thinking, you know, God, he is my patron and he is my best friend. And if he is permitting me or causing me to go through this pain right now, oh, I can't wait till the victory comes. Oh, I know that when the blessing comes, I'm going to be prepared to receive the blessing, because I went through the test to get to the testimony. I can bear witness that there is no God but Allah and that he loves me, because I got through that, and now I get to have this. So even these storms of life and storms of nature are all preparing us. Like that brother got to come on and give his testimony. Somebody heard him, and they weren't listening to us, but they were listening to him. That eyewitness testimony is always the best lecture. So we do all the talking we want to do, but that brother came on, and now somebody is thinking, yep, I might want to get my backpack together. Like that sister asked that question earlier, oh, what's the point? You know, Katrina, something happened. It doesn't help that you're prepared. And that brother who lived through a Katrina said, oh, yeah, now I got my stuff ready. So he that was better to answer her question than both of us, Queen, because he had that eyewitness testimony. I bet you now she's willing to put in the bag together. So all praises be to Allah for someone surviving something, to be a witness bearer for the next one who's about to go through it. It's such a blessing to be a survivor.
Yes, ma'am. And we have one more question on the line from Austin, Texas. So 3740, your mic is live.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
I just wanted to say that I was really touched by the brother who gave his testimony, and it really confirmed what we learned from Captain Khalid over the weekend, because he did at the Youth Summit in Houston, he did a presentation on martial law and what it is, and how, you know, the government agencies that set it up, he gave us a history on it and everything. And it's exactly what the brother said. They're not there to help you. When there's martial law, you have no rights. They can shoot you when they want to. There's no real protection of the law. The law is not going to be on your side. And we have to be mentally prepared for that as well. When Brother Khalid came into the room where the believers were to demonstrate what martial law was, it was a toy gun with a red light attached to it, and he was just yelling, "Get on the floor! Get on the floor! Get on the floor!" And it came out of nowhere. We didn't know that was going to happen. That's how it began. That's how it began. That's how his presentation began, with a toy gun with a red light flashing in your face. Get on the floor. Get on the floor. So I can only imagine what that brother experienced in reality. What Captain was just, you know, giving us a demonstration of what martial law was. That brother experienced what martial law was. Because when there's martial law, they can dictate what resources you can receive. So they could cut off the water supply if they want to. They don't have to feed you anything. They don't have to supply you with anything. And they can kill at will. There's no habeas corpus.
Damn, what kind of... That sounds like something that happens in Russia or something, some third world.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Oh.
And we were looking at pictures of Katrina, not even knowing we were looking at pictures of Katrina. I thought that it was Haiti.
Oh.
Or some third world country. I didn't even know that was Louisiana.
Wow. Tyler back on to tell us a little more about this, y'all.
It's real. That brother made that presentation real for me. He made it real.
Yes, brother has an excellent presentation, and he drives the point home in real time, very quickly, to get you to feel what a person would be going through at that point, but also to get you to know beyond the shadow of a doubt that this thing is real. Like they used to say, back there, is it live or is it Memorex? Oh, no, this is live. And this is the way things transpire and the way things go down. and it happens in such real time so quickly that you don't have time to process anything. And see, that's why it's so important we practice and rehearse, because long before your ability or capacity to think your way through kicks in, your body is going to be in motion doing something. And if you have not already trained it to do something, it may do something that will get you killed.
Ooh.
Wow.
Praise be to Allah.
Yes, ma'am.
This information is power.
Oh, without a doubt. There is no substitution. Also, for training.
That's true.
Micah.
Oh, we got to do a part two on that.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, we do. And as a matter of fact, we're going to, in the days to come, it's going to be more than a part two because, as I said, something is getting ready to kick off. And when I don't have permission to go into it in detail at this yet at this point, so I won't. But in the near future, the family will receive information as to what is going to happen August 29th of this year and where it's going to happen all over simultaneously. Because people need to know that Katrina, although it is almost 9 years ago, it's still current news.
That's
and
right.
It's still fresh in the minds of some of our families, especially those who have had to live that horror because they're still living the horror.
So, well, it's like 10, 12, so do you want to start doing closing statements? Or what you want to do, Queen? You want to go on and run it?
No, well, we don't have any more questions or any more comments from the phone. It's, but, you know, Brother Rudolph is the Commander-in-Chief. It's up to him.
Oh, no, ma'am. The Commander-in-Chief just spoke, and I hear and I obey, so I'm going to give my closing statement right now and then turn it back over to her so she can do hers, because she's at the helm of this ship and has been all day, and I appreciate that. It happened to me too, Sister Lachelle, just what happened to you.
Right, I was getting that. I was like, oh, no, it's catchy.
I got some chuckleheads over here too. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Our alternate teammates are not as good as our first race.
Right. So all praises due to Allah. But Queen Aziza, just so you know, I don't know if you know that Sister Lachelle is just getting back to Detroit because she was in Boston with me this weekend. All praises due to Allah, and I thank Allah for her assistance in Boston, and we have to give the family the greetings from Minister Don Muhammad and the believers of Mosque Number 11.
That's right.
They did send the greetings to the family. As-salamu alaykum.
And please return the greetings to Brother Minister Donald, who I love so very much. And yes, I did know, because we saw the beautiful pictures posted of your magnificent work and presentation, Sister Lachelle and Brother Rudolph. I've just got to say it again. You all are too cute.
Well,
We're definitely a good team. I mean, I can't complain at all.
Yes, and have to give, again, more shout-outs to Sister Virginia, Sister Zakia, and, of course, Brother James. Those are the ones I'm naming, but those heartfelt thanks goes out to everyone who had anything to do with what went on this weekend in Boston, and for the love and the support that they showed me and Sister. I thank them, and that's why it's just such a blessing to be a Muslim in this day and time.
That's right.
To be a member in the Nation of Islam.
That's right.
No boundaries and no borders, and I can go anywhere in this country, anywhere in this world,
right,
where there are other believers, and I'm welcome, I feel at home, and it's just like going to, as the scripture says, in my Father's house are many mansions.
That's right.
Like room in the mansion. So all praises are due to Allah for that. So again, family, we want to thank you for tuning in this week. Again, we want to thank Brother Kamal for coming on and bearing witness and giving his heartfelt testimony. And we just want you to stay tuned, because we never know what's going to go on this show, just like you never know what's going to happen on this show. So you just got to go along for the ride. And be prepared, as Allah takes control and does what only Allah can do. We just have to realize that, again, Allah is in control, and we just going on for the ride. He's not
the
co-pilot. We're the co-pilot. So as it says in the song, Allah take the wheel.
That's right.
And let's just ride this thing till the wheels fall off. So
that's
again,
right.
I thank you, family, and may Allah continue to bless you and us.
Assalamu
alaikum, Sister Michelle.
Oh, all praises due to Allah. All I want to say is that you all need to go on the website, careunitdetroit.weebly.com, or email me at careunitdetroit911@live.com, and let's go ahead and get you scheduled to bring Brother Rudolph into your city, so he can do the presentation for you that he just did in Boston. I did post as many of the pictures as I could in real time. As they were posting, he was performing. And I'm telling you, the brother has been blessed by Allah. He is a God at what he does. I mean, I already know the presentation in advance, and I'm sitting there learning, too. I'm sitting there in awe of him, too. Because when the Spirit moves him, and Allah just starts downloading information into him that's not in the PowerPoint presentation, that's not in the handout. If you got the handout and you've seen the PowerPoint, you have not got the training, because Allah make it new. Every single time, everyone is completely different. And every time I'm just sitting there like, wow, Brother Rudolph. So all praises due to Allah for the wonderful gift. And please book your slot for Brother Rudolph to come to your study group, mom's organization, and do his thing. Sister Queen.
Yes, well, I want to thank everybody in the chat room and everybody who called in. And I want to thank my two listeners from Austin, Texas, for sharing the information with us about
right.
Law and the horrors of Hurricane Katrina. Thank you, Brother Kamal, so very much for sharing your story with us. And brother, I just thank Allah that you survived. You are truly
right.
A historian, because people will be talking about Hurricane Katrina 50 years from now, and you are a living and walking testimony and historian to all of us who could only imagine what happened down there. But you lived through it. And so, brother, we thank you, and we thank Allah for you. And so, join us on Thursday. I'll be back here with Stanley and Sister Ruth on our marriage segment. So please tune in for that. And thank you, Brother Rudolph and Sister Lachelle, for all of the work that you do in disaster preparedness, because you're making us all better, making us all wiser, and, of course, getting us all prepared for not if, but when the disaster actually occurs. So we thank Allah for you, Brother Rudolph, all the work that you do. And Brother Rudolph does these presentations for free. So please support our brother to the best of your ability. It's not easy traveling from city to city. He's all the way in New York, coming across country just to give you information to save your life. So please support our dear brother in his effort to save us all. Thank you, Brother Rudolph, again so much, just for your spirit and for your heart to do this. So we will leave you as we came before you in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Wa alaikum salam. Alaikum salam.